Robert Applebaum, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us today here on 101.9 Chai FM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, Robert, now you are a brave man because you wrote an article which is at odds with what 99.9% of us no doubt are feeling. Why, and what is your reasons for suggesting what you suggest?
So the interesting part before we get into the rationale was that the vast majority of people that have heard the general concept of what we're proposing have got upset.
Yes.
But thereafter, the vast majority of them have come around to our side. So very, just put it very simply.
Yes.
I've been a lawyer for a long time, and I've been watching national prosecuting authority flailing, and it's not their fault. I mean, Jacob Zuma came along and denuded them of all of their best people. And they are now desperately trying to get back into the game. And when the head of the National Prosecuting Authority admits that it will take, I think, if I recall correctly, about 9 years to get all of this right, I just hope that all of us live long enough, coronavirus excepted, yes, to see people in orange jumpsuits. So just going back some time, a couple of years ago, I floated something similar, and I'm not talking about blanket amnesties for the bad guys, but a couple of years ago, in order to try get Jacob Zuma to step aside, something similar was floated, and it was rejected by, some of the sort of more senior business people in town on the basis that they wanted Zuma would be okay if he got amnesty, but not the people who had given him money. They shouldn't. So, that was, a couple of years ago, and last year kind of sat back myself and a couple of very smart lawyers, two advocates and another person who works with me, and we sat back and said, well, you know, what is happening in South Africa? Has anything in fact taken place? How many orange jumpsuits have we seen? And then we did a review of what's being done around the world in terms of call it amnesties, call it conditional amnesties, call it deferred prosecutions, the whole bunch of different words we can give, but this is not a pardon, and it's not a blanket amnesty we're suggesting. So what we have proposed is essentially come confess your sins, give all the evidence, have a proper audit of the information you're giving, and then pay a penalty, and the penalty, I'm not being prescriptive. I'd love it to be 100% of what has been stolen out of the economy, but the likelihood is much of that has been spent already. So, you know, it's somewhere in the region. So come confess your sins, give all the information about the who you did what with, pay money, and there could be other consequences. So, you know, we've been attacked by people who automatically assumed there was a blanket pardon. You take all these bad people and give all the bad people amnesty, and off they go, and they continue to behave badly. But this has been done elsewhere in the world very successfully.
Robert, I hear you loud and clear, and I think you've taken a really realistic approach in the circumstances. But a gentleman on the panel at the time, is reported to have said that without justice, there can be no rule of law, and without accountability, there can be no social contract. You can't factor out the need for accountability, for revenge that so many of us feel, or can you?
Well, we're not. So does revenge mean jail?
Yes.
Or does revenge mean payment of fines and penalties? I mean, which gives you greater pleasure? So, and which do we have more possibility of actually achieving? So, I used, when I was on that panel, and the gentleman, Robert McBride, did say it, he also, I think, if I recall, he wanted to know if anyone was being paid to suggest this.
Yes,
which was a little outrageous.
Yes.
And also a bit amusing. But I used the example, and I can use a whole bunch. So Gary Porritt, when I was in law in the 1990s, we all knew about the prosecution that was coming his way. In 2002, they charged him with 3,200 crimes. We now in 2020, he has never been convicted of one. He's had three judges recuse themselves. It's very simple. If you've got enough stolen money, You can do what he did. You could do what Dave King did. You could do what Jacob Zuma's doing. So I'm being a realist. You know, would I love them all in jail? Yes. Are we likely to see them in jail? I don't think very many of them. But again, you know, what people forget, I used a couple of examples. The one was the Hong Kong amnesty, which we can talk about if, Simon, if you're interested.
Yep.
The other one is, what is done, what was done in South Africa by Pravin Gordhan and Trevor Manuel with our exchange control amnesty, and our tax amnesty in 2002, 2003. And if you recall, maybe
it's not the same though, is it?
I mean, a little bit age-wise, but essentially what they did and was very smart, they went and started to arrest tax offenders, one from every community. There was a very well-known Jewish gentleman locked up, as there was a Portuguese gentleman, as there was a Greek gentleman. And when it got to Ivan Koza, the owner of Orlando Pirates, we all went, yo, this is being taken seriously. And that's when 43,000 odd people arrived to ask for amnesty. So I'm not suggesting that, yeah, I would love Jacob Zuma to go to jail. Do I think he's likely to? I don't, but that's a personal view. So yeah, I mean, go and arrest a few and do your worst. But is it practical? You know, we looked at the Estina Dairy. Remember Estina Dairy?
Very well.
When the National Prosecuting Authority was like very up in, you know, they were doing great things, and they went and arrested all these people and put them on trial, and it got thrown out because, quite honestly, it had been badly investigated, and badly prosecuted. So our view is again, we're being practical. Give the National Prosecuting Authority the time to get its act together. Let them go after the people who won't ask for amnesty. And remember the Truth and Reconciliation Commission? A whole bunch didn't ask. Now, the fact that the prosecutors thereafter didn't go after those people who weren't seeking amnesty is a fault of the prosecution services. So we're saying let them use the ammunition they have. They're building it up. Go after the future offenders. Go after the offenders that don't seek amnesty. And I'm saying audit the information given. If it's incorrect, go after them. So, you know, Shamita Batoyi and the National Prosecuting Authority could be kept going and very busy for a long time, but use their money carefully and use their resources carefully. That's all I'm saying.
So I have with me co-presenter's name is David Kochakov, and he is a young, idealistic law student, and I think he wants to take you on. Over to you, David.
I don't necessarily want to take you on. I just would like to quickly ask, you know, the law in a jurisprudential term is basically a deterrent against any future action, any sort of breaking of the law. Sort of what it sounds like to me is you're suggesting a payment, like a payment back. You give amnesty if they pay back, but there's no interest on whatever they have to pay back. There's not even a jail term. It's just whatever you have left, whatever you haven't spent, you must give back. Surely that would fail the law as a deterrent, and if there are, would there not be any future consequences?
We haven't opined on whether interest is paid or not, but I'm sure you being a law student, I'm sure you'll be keeping track of what takes place in the U.S. every time a major corporation is found wanting.
Hmm.
And essentially, very simply, they call it deferred prosecution. So you're called in, you are shown the dirt they have on you, you are forced to come and confess your sins, you're forced to come and pay enormous amounts of money, that hurts. Have a look at HSBC. HSBC, all of the above has happened to them, and they have landed up with a law firm in all of their offices around the world, which is a monitor. The monitor can open your drawers, your computers, your safes at any time. And if you go and you recommit, or you have not told the truth, then people start going to jail. And then further prosecution takes place. So this is what you're suggesting is a get out of jail free. I'm not suggesting that at all. And whether there is or isn't interest, hey, I mean, if it were up to me, you'd be paying through your nose. But the bottom line is people have spent money. And again, so let's assume a company, X is caught doing this. Yes, let's go take away all the money and let's collapse the company and let all the people be unemployed, all the workers. So rather be practical and work out, and it's up to Parliament. This is not, I'm not suggesting what the numbers are and how impactful it is, and I'm not suggesting what jail sentences should be applied, assuming that one lies or one doesn't give correct information. But all we're doing is saying let's start a process and let's go through with this process, because the current one isn't working.
But like, if you kind of look at America, you bring up America and their corporations as an example. There are countless corporations who are still doing it regardless of whether or not their compatriots have been given a law office in their building. The practice is still going on. Surely that fails the country, its system of law as a deterrent. Companies will still do these sort of things.
Whether you put people in jail or whether you charge people lots of money, unfortunately, people, you're not going to change the nature of people. Deterrence, the worst deterrent is either jail and or huge amounts of money. I mean, which one embarrasses more, which one hurts more? But I mean, if you're telling me that jail means that that's the real deterrent, then why do we have as many criminals as we do in South Africa and elsewhere? I mean, it would be a great idea if it was the great deterrent, but it isn't the great deterrent.
Robert Applebaum,
that's what people do.